SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, let's roll. We're into level two. The quickest 120 minutes of sports talk and television. Sirius XM channel 159, just looking at the scores right now. We got San Diego State and UNLV ready to tip off. I was wrong the other day about Fresno and UNLV. UNLV got it done. They're 5-1 straight up in their last six games. They're playing their best basketball of the season right now. But San Diego State are also 5-1 straight up in their last six games. And they are a better team than UNLV. This isn't Nevada, who are kind of having a down year. SDSU generally have owned them, but UNLV have won two of the last three times that they've played. Cam said earlier he's taking UNLV. I'm going to take the San Diego State Aztecs to win this game. Arkansas are up 43-36 right now on Vandy. And what's going on in the in Eugene, Oregon? Indiana are up by 1 point, 64-63. I could use overtime because I got the over in this game as well as Indiana plus the points. All right, there's a lot of stuff I want to get to with Rob Pozzola. So we talked about the the touts and stuff. And as I stated, I don't think a blanket statement is fair either. There are some good people out there. And, you know, I spoke, there's a guy that owns one of these services and stuff, and it is true. This goes back to, guys, to who's the godfather, pretty much one of the godfathers of all of this, and Jim Feist. And I remember I asked Jim, I said, so how you doing, Jim? How are the picks going? And he goes, good enough to sell. And he told me, he goes, it's not about... He goes, making money in this business isn't about winning. Like, he was onto it, Rob. He goes, it ain't about winning. He goes, as long as you don't lose much, it's about selling. And I remember talking to a guy that owns one of these big websites that, you know, has a bunch of cappers on the contract. And he told me, you know who the best ones are? He goes, this guy actually literally does win, like 65, 70% of the time. He goes, worst marketer ever. Hates social media. Doesn't know how to sell himself. So there are winners out there, Rob, right? Like I said, I did the show every day out of the sports book in New York at FanDuel when it opened, and there were dudes that just crushed the book every night, but they were quiet. They didn't want to get robbed, right? They didn't want people knowing that how much money they had, so they used to play it down. But there are winners out there. What to you, Rob, what is a successful day or week in betting? What would you be your advice to people? As long as you're up at the end of the day, have a goal. Have a goal to hit. Living in Vegas before, there was, you know, in the old days, it was more money at the time, but it was simply, hey, you make $200 a day, that's 72K a year, right? Yeah, you know what absolutely. I mean? That was sort of like at the tables. You double that, it's not impossible to make 400 a day, Rob. Suddenly you're making 144 a year, etc. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I think you bring up a good point. Like, you need to first and foremost set realistic goals for yourself, right? Every bettor is going to be different. I mean, if someone who's capable of betting 8 hours a day and it's at their computer all day is going to have different goals and expectations than someone who's going to work and then's going to come home and bet for, you know, maybe half an hour before the game start. For some people, and for a lot of people, the goal actually should just be, as lame as this sounds, just to make it entertaining and have fun. Mm-hmm. And the goal should be not to go overboard. Because, like, that just ruins sports betting for everyone. So if you're just a pure recreational bettor, get the thought of winning out of your head and just make it a practice for fun, right? Play your $2 lottery ticket every night. That's totally fine, right? But if you have expectations to win, it really depends on the time that you're devoting to it. So I personally hate when people track stuff in form of units, right? I'm up 40 units and this and that. It's like, what's your ROI, right? Because you could be up 40 units on 40,000 bets, or you could be up 40 units on 100 bets. And those are very, very different things. So for me, it's an ROI-based metric that I like to look at. I hate when people are up, like, yeah, this many units this week. It's like, okay, how many bets is that? Because you could be up 12 units. I could be up less, but, like, it doesn't make a difference. Like, so I hate that.
Remember games? When you go to Lombardo, you go, what's in your unit? What's the unit size? Remember that time? It was amazing.
Well, Babano has 4 million bets a year. Oh, like, no, you see his record at the end of the year.
I'm like, whoa!
3,202 and 2,701. No, it was Loshack. that got into it years ago. I didn't mean to. It was the Super Bowl with the Patriots and the Eagles. Patriots and Eagles when Nick Foles won. We were doing a show in Costa Rica at the casino. We all gave our picks before. It was like quarter unit on this prop, half a unit on this prop, and this. And I asked them, I said, just for the record, what's a unit? Like 100 or 2? Like, what does a unit size mean? And he goes, that's a pretty personal question. I said, it's not that personal. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, it's not really that personal. I was like, how much? And I said, how much are you betting on the game? But he didn't want to tell me.
That's amazing. That's pretty personal.
There could be reasons somebody wouldn't want to reveal their
exactly.
reasons or whatever. Someone asks you privately in the casino, hey, like, what are you throwing down on the game? You could even, like, give them an estimate or, like, a range or something like that. You don't have to be like, yeah, you know, I'm not exactly comfortable with that. But, yeah, it's that, you know, for me, it's about ROI. Because for me, I like to bet high volume. I'm like Bobano. I'll place tons. I got, like, 100 NBA prop bets going tonight, right? Yeah. And I have that on average every single night. I'm looking for all these little edges that'll compound over time. That's very different from someone who's
That was Billy Waters' style, though. People don't realize that. Like, he would just freaking attack the board on a night, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just all over the place. And then at the end of the night, just say, all right, yeah, we won 280K. Good. Move on to the next day. Right? There's all different ways of approaching it. Let me ask you, though, Rob, because football is such a number-generated sort of betting sport. Yep. Outside of football season, what do you find? What's your favorite sport to bet on? Where's the advantage? I would say UFC and MMA, but it's not for everybody because it's hard for the sports books to really sort of computerize it. You know, hockey, you could argue as well. It's sort of more random, but hockey is a random sport. We all know it. Anyone who knows betting on hockey. Basketball, I would say, you know, NBA and college, man, these guys, it's like the NFL. Their computers have the numbers down so sharp, Rob. We only got about 2 minutes here, but what do you find is the best sport or your favorite, your more successful sport to attack outside of football season?
Yeah, so for people that don't know me, I'm a math guy, right? I run algorithms every day that generate my bets. I bet a lot of hockey because personally I found success with that, but it's a challenging market. MMA is a great example of a market that people should be trying to bet because exactly as you said, Gabe, it's really, really hard to model MMA fights. There's not enough data. A lot of these guys are fighting on like 5 career fights. What are you going to do with that? So that's a great one. But generally, as the limits get lower, you have a better chance to win, right? Like people want to bet the NFL and college football and NBA, but sportsbooks are taking huge bets on those. They're only taking like 500 on, you know, potentially like a NASCAR event or MMA or something like that. So those are the best spots. If that's a good enough bet for you, attack markets that other people don't really even bet into.
All right, we got about a minute left here. You got a Stanley Cup future, Rob, for us, or a team or two that you think there's value on the board with?
I still like the Dallas Stars in the West as just like a good playoff team. I think that they're really built for the playoffs. You look at Edmonton, it's a lot of like high-end talent, bad goaltending. I think Winnipeg, I mean, we've seen Hellebuck shaken in the playoffs in years past. I'm not completely sold on them. So Dallas, to me, is very live in the West right now. East is more up for grabs. I kind of like, I don't even want to say the Leafs because it's so embarrassing and they're going to find a way to blow it this year. I just don't like, there's like no dark horse in the East for me this year. I think it's...
I'd love to see the Jets versus the Leafs. I prefer Canucks versus the Leafs, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Hey, Leafs versus Red.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Twisted Tuesday continues. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's talk NFL football. Let's talk NFL draft. Let's talk NFL combine. and more. Our main man, Rick Saratella, steps up and in. AllAccessFootball.com, the founder of the NFL Draft Bible. Rick, it's always a pleasure, my man. Let's do this thing.
Oh, baby, combine time. What a week it was. Let's get into it.
So I'm always fascinated by how players can rise or fall with, you know, in mock drafts without actually doing anything, right? So, so what I want to ask you as well, Cam Ward has distanced himself from Shedeur Sanders to be the top quarterback taken. Maybe not the number one pick, but the first quarterback taken in a National Football League draft. And now suddenly there seems to be the anti-Shedeur media push in which, oh, he could fall into the 20s. It didn't go well for him in Indianapolis. And I'm thinking, he didn't do anything in Indianapolis. Like, he didn't work out. So what's going on in your opinion right now? Why is Cam Ward so popular? And why are the media going after Shedeur Sanders as much as they are?
Well, I think Cam Ward is just respected around league circles in the scouting community as the go-to guy. And I can't pinpoint exactly why that is. Maybe it's just games played and experience. I don't know, Gabe. I think the media side of things, he's been vilified, right? Like, Shedeur Sanders can do no right. I mean, this guy gets credit for doing nothing. If you watch any of his media interviews throughout the week, not just the podium interview, but all of his media interviews, this guy is mature beyond his years. I mean, this guy is, like, incredibly smart, intelligent, and that's not only off the field, but on the field. He's everything you want from a CEO quarterback. Now he's made some rap videos and he has a watch endorsement and he's a 20-year-old kid. So I think the media kind of overhypes those kind of things. And, oh, by the way, he's the son of Deion Sanders, Coach Prime. But I don't know. To me, Shedeur Sanders is still the clear-cut one in my book. The NFL seems to value Cam Ward. And we're going to see, man. There's 50 days or so, 51 days until the draft. A lot can happen still.
Yeah, I'm not ready to write Shedeur Sanders off yet either. And I think a lot of it is actually planted by teams who want to see him fall so they could get him. I thought the same thing that you just said, Rick. In the interviews, when you watch him on a podium, he actually seemed like a professional football player already. And I thought personally, which nobody in the media really gave him credit for, is how many quarterbacks that are in the draft stand up and defend another quarterback that's getting ripped in the media like Will Howard was?
Yeah, I saw,
like,
that.
I thought that showed, like, his character. He said, you know, and he actually, you know, he went online. So he put his name on. He went on Twitter. And he said, "You're all ripping on a quarterback that won the Natty last year. Not easy to throw to new players in a combine setting like that." I thought that showed a hell of a lot about his character, personally.
Yeah, he could have just said, "That's exactly why I didn't work out."
Or, "Hey, I'm a lot better than that." You know what I mean? Like, he could have, like, you know, could have been a lot of things, right? Like, look at Travis Hunter's attitude coming here. Well, I think what I do is more impressive than Shohei Ohtani. It's like, all right, just calm down, right? But it was just sort of, like you said, though, Shador's one of these people, he can seemingly do no right, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with the media, they've already made their mind up about him. Like, they want to see him fail. They want to see Deion fail. That, you know, they want to see Deion fail.
And this is what happens when you hit March, because we build these guys up their whole career, really, like from Jackson State over to Colorado. And then you got all these months to kill leading up to the draft. If you remember, Josh Rosen, I think he was the number one overall pick. But if you remember, they tried to tear him down with the personality, the quirky traits. Is he an arrogant jerk kind of thing? And it might have turned out to be true, but these are the kind of things that happens leading up to the NFL draft. But I think it's overkill with Shedeur Sanders. I really do.
I think Rosen, when did Rosen actually go? I don't think he was first. He might have been seventh. Sixth, seventh, but I get where you're going with that. You know what, though? I remember they said, hey, you know, the you always read the scouting reports. Nobody thought Patrick Mahomes was going to be who he was after. Like, you know what I'm saying? Justin Herbert, always, oh, he's too laid back. There's always stuff. But so let me ask you about Travis Hunter, actually, because pretty fascinating. This draft is so unpredictable right now. Let's say, hypothetically, Tennessee does not trade the pick. They take Abdul Carter. Cleveland Browns step up and take Cam Ward. Then you get the New York Giants. You and I talk a lot about the Giants. I'm not buying this Aaron Rodgers stuff, bro. I think the Giants would love to get Shedeur Sanders. So I got Shedeur going 3 to the Giants as of right now. Rick, what's your take?
Oh, I think if Shedeur is there when the Giants pick, they would absolutely do cartwheels. And I don't think they would shy away from drafting Shedeur Sanders, even if they signed an Aaron Rodgers, because I think you can get Aaron Rodgers for 2 years at about $50 million total. Never mind $50 million per, what they wanted to pay Stafford. So I think you can get Rodgers $25 million a year, still draft Shedeur Sanders, kind of have that year of transition if they want to go that route. Now, taking Aaron Rodgers and drafting Travis Hunter is not a bad blueprint if you feel like you can win right now. We talked about this. I don't look at the Giants roster and say, hey, they're a blue chip player or two away. I think this whole team needs to be rebuilt from the foundation up. And we've been saying that, it seems like, ever since Eli Manning retired. So I think there's a lot of work to be done with the Big Blue. They should start with getting the quarterback right. And if that means doubling down, like the Vikings just did with Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy, it's not a bad blueprint. Kirk Cousins, Michael Penix, not a bad blueprint to follow.
And I've heard the same thing as Rick Saratella just talked about. We just saw the Atlanta Falcons do that last year. So let me ask you about Travis Hunter. And I know we're coming up against it here with the break, but let's say hypothetically things go the way we just talked about like that, right? So you've got you've got Carter, you've got Ward, you've got Shedeur Sanders. That leads us into the fourth pick of the National Football League draft. And the New England Patriots, Travis Hunter is plus 210 to go to the Patriots, and he's plus 550 to go to the Jacksonville Jags. I don't think he gets past 5, but I'm not sure the Patriots go Travis Hunter. They could, but they have so many options. We'll break it down and more with our main man, Rick Saratella, on the other side. This is Sports Rage. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Twisted Tuesday continues. Sirius XM Channel 159, Sports Grid Radio and Television Network. And we were just talking, Rick brought up Josh Rosen before, who I actually liked a lot at UCLA. This kid was a gamer, leading big comebacks, getting hit, getting back up. And you know, he got to the National Football League and things just imploded. But he was part of that stacked draft with Baker and Darnold and our guy Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. But he was 10th. He was 10th, and that was the year Baker went first overall, which at the time I thought was insane that Baker was going first overall. But nevertheless, all right, so as far as Travis Hunter is concerned, if you're the Patriots, you got big decisions to make. Let's say you're holding the, you know, you got the fourth pick. You could go defensive line. You could go with a Pierce. You could go with a Mason Graham. You could go wide receiver McMillan, pair him up with May for the next decade, potentially. Then you've got the, you know, Travis Hunter. The debate is which side of the football is Travis Hunter going to play? And then you got the Jags with the fifth pick. And if the Patriots don't take Travis Hunter, I think the Jaguars would at plus 550. So the Patriots are plus 210 to take him. The Jags are plus 550. What do you think about Travis Hunter? Where does he end up as of right now?
There's no way he's lasting till number 5. He's the best player in the draft. So when you're building a team like the New England Patriots, you need to acquire as many blue chip foundational cornerstone pieces as possible. And when you start drafting need over best player available, that's when you start to make the mistakes. Travis Hunter is the best player available. You take Travis Hunter, you plug him in next to Christian Gonzalez, you got the best 1-2 cornerback dynamo in the league, and then, oh, by the way, they got no wide receivers on that team. You can create a package for him on offense, too.
Well said by Rick Saratella. I have a hard time arguing. If you were in a court of law, I'd say if I was on the jury, I'd be like, all right, I was pretty solid from the attorney there. Ashton Gentry Ashton Jeanty, team to draft Ashton Jeanty. Cowboys plus 260, Bears plus 320, Raiders plus 320, Broncos plus 700, Chargers 12-1, Steelers 12-1. What are you hearing about Ashton Jeanty? How you know, where does he get drafted in this draft? How long do you think he lasts?
I think he could go as high as the Raiders at number 6, and I would have a hard time believing he slides past the Cowboys in round 1. But I'll tell you what, Gabe, after watching this Omarion Hampton at 6'1", 225, running a 4.440 and a 40-inch vertical and being able to catch the ball out of the backfield and do all these wonderful things, there's some teams there that have Omarion Hampton as the top running back in this year's draft. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Hampton come off the board before Jeanty. Although I do think Jeanty has the upper hand still at this point, unless he just, unless his pro day is a debacle, right? Unless his 40 time is atrocious, I still think Jeanty will be in there, but we're going to get at least 2 running backs in the first round, maybe 3.
Yeah, Hampton stock is definitely climbing. Rick, there's so much talk about this draft and the lack of quarterbacks, although Jackson Dart has definitely worked his way into a first-round pick, and you've been talking about him for a while, and you expected this. But, you know, it seems like it's a pretty deep draft as far as, like, defensive linemen are concerned, and there's a bunch of DBs. Sort of a meat and potatoes. I saw someone say it's a lunch pail type of draft. But one thing that sticks out, man, is, man, these dudes that are like 6'7", 340 pounds are running the same 40s that Jerry Rice ran years ago. That's what stood out to me. Not you and I talked about, like, oh, Arian Smith and Xavier Worthy in the 40 times and all that. The talk of the town was really, yeah, the 40 times of the big man that just killed it.
It's fascinating. Like, a guy like Ja Joyner out of Minnesota is like 262 pounds, 6'5". He hit over 23 miles per hour during his 40-yard dash time, right? You got guys like James Pierce. I just said this on my last show. If you were to manufacture in a machine, right, and spit out the prototype defensive end pass rusher, James Pierce Jr. probably would spit out of that manufacturing operation. This guy's got bend. He's got dip. He runs a 4.440 at 235. Now, you're hearing character concerns. Some teams have removed him from the draft board entirely, right? So he can go in the top 10. He can go on day 3, from what I'm hearing.
Oh, that means the Eagles are going to get another guy in the second round, man, if everyone smears him.
Well, he's screaming Eagles all over. But to your point, like, Membu, the 325-pound offensive lineman running a 4.91 40, and all these guys coming in bigger, stronger. Hold that
thought. SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Tuesday continues on the Sports Grid Radio and Television Network. Man, we've been stacked tonight, but we love talking football with Rick Saratella. So, Rick, as we went to the break, we were talking about the speed of these big men, and you were talking about James Pierce. One thing with James Pierce, though, and we have to admit this, you and I talked about him, and I've talked a lot with our SEC insider, Brent Beard, throughout the year. It's that classic, he does take a lot of plays off. You and I spoke about it during the year this year. I mean, there'd be games where he's not there. There'd be games where he was. Yep. And so I couldn't help but think about that when I saw him lighting it up at the combine. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, you're getting it all right now. This is the money day for him, right? And he's really going to blow people away. But talk to me about that, Rick. I'm sure you've seen the same thing, right? You and I have watched Tennessee Volunteer games, and sometimes we didn't hear his name called.
132 career quarterback pressures, 19 and a half career sacks, right? There's a lot of sacks left on the table. In other words, he needs to learn how to finish. But that's the thing. Like, he's got the athleticism, the bend, the dip, the rip. that's where the war room conversations become interesting, because the general manager or the personnel or the area scout comes in and say what you just said, Gabriel Morenci. And then you get the defensive line coach or the defensive coordinator or the Rex Ryan in the room that says, yo, give me that guy. Don't worry about nothing. I'll get it out of him.
But then you got a guy like Mason Graham. I know they're not the same, you know, the same player, but you got a guy that really doesn't take plays off. Like Mason Graham's just sort of that grinder, that constant. Different players, both great players, right? No. But that's a debate that has to be had in a war room, right?
Well, and a great compare and contrast, because if you stood them up side by side, you'd think Mason Graham was a garbage worker.
Right? I love what you just said. I was going to think, or a janitor that used to play football or something. I saw him next to State. You know exactly. I talked about him. I saw him next to Stacey Dales, and he wasn't that much bigger than her, actually. Number one, Stacey Dales played in the WNBA, so she's a pretty big woman, right? She's tall. But you're right. Mason Graham doesn't have that. He doesn't have that, like, you know, that impressive body type. Like, he almost looks like Siragusa, except, like, you know what I mean? He sort of got this round sort of thing. But you're like, oh, wow, he actually is like 6'3", you know. He was listed 320 at Michigan. He was listed 296 at the Combine. But I'm just stating those are the debates that have to be had. Yeah, Pierce looks great. He looks the part, right? Yeah. He'll sell more calendars, right, if you want to put him on the cover of a calendar. But who's going to help us win more football games every Sunday?
Yeah, and, you know, I was waiting for Stacey Dales to just, like, post him up like Karl Malone during that interview. but one thing I want to get out there, though, that makes you question some things. Jahad Campbell out of Alabama, like, I thought he was going to be an off-ball linebacker, but you see how he was used with the Crimson Tide, situational pass rusher, 4-4-4, 4-4-5-40. I think now teams are thinking about Jahad Campbell as an edge rusher. And to your point, if you like to build from the inside out, inside the trenches, this is the draft to do it. It gets knocked for the star appeal, the lack of quarterbacks, but there's depth, tremendous depth at a lot of different positions.
Now, we kidded about the Philadelphia Eagles and James Pierce, but the Eagles, you know, have done a great job of this, about drafting players that have fallen in the draft due to character concerns. And they say, you know, we'll deal with it once the player gets here. And or a player that is underachieved at the combine and or in their, you know, their last year of college football. But I think the Eagles also, you know, they're proving that they are the best run football team in the National Football League right now, in my opinion. And look what they do with Saquon Barkley, right? I mean, the debate goes from, well, you know, teams, they don't want to pay running backs, to the Eagles pull the trigger. They bring Saquon Barkley in. They win the Super Bowl, and what do? They reward them, right? They're giving them like a $40 million+ extension, highest paid running back in NFL history. That sends a message out to other players in the league. Not only do they win, but they take care of their players after.
They take care of their players. They do it in advance. Howie Roseman's a captologist. He runs
always a year ahead, or a year or two ahead, right? Getting the deals done.
That's right, and he's just running circles around these guys in the draft. I want to speak to the point, though. You said they bring these guys in the locker room. They've had a lot of veteran leadership, but it's starting to depart the locker room, because they just cut Darius Slay. They just cut James Bradbury. Fletcher Cox used to be there. Jason Kelsey's no longer around. So they had all these veteran leadership guys in the locker room to kind of reel these guys in that were a little had some loose bolts, right? So that's something to keep an eye on. But when you talk about identifying talent and developing talent and being ahead of the salary cap, Howie Roseman is the standard right now in the National Football League.
Now, as far as other quarterbacks in the draft, Rick, at the Combine were concerned, didn't seem like anybody really blew anybody away. Kyle McCord did some good things. You know, I thought Will Howard, you know, there's always going to be a video or something like that, right? So, some, you know, people put together a compilation of Will Howard overthrowing, underthrowing wide open receivers. But at the same point in time, he also made a lot of nice throws. And I know he impressed a lot of people through the interviews as well. But what about there was a quarterback that seemed that really did struggle, was Dillon Gabriel, for whatever reason, couldn't get into a groove in Indianapolis. And what wild times, too, huh, Rick? Like, with now the crowd cheering and people in the stands and stuff like that. I mean, for it, just it would be Bill Belichick with his binoculars.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic. It's kind of hard for me to still get used to it.
Yeah, like the players are getting the fans into it and stuff. It's like, yeah, it's almost like a TV reality show now or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you kind of get the reserved golf clap after the 40-yard dash.
Yeah, yeah. And then the big guy runs fast and everyone's like, ah. You know, I call it the afternoon strip club club. You know, the golf club.
Well, I think you know believe it or not, the ratings have only been about 225,000 average viewers are coming into this year. So they're trying to do something to liven up the combine. I think that's why you're hearing talk they might move it. But in terms of like draft, Super Bowl, all the NFL, you know, we talk about NFL is king and they dominate. The combine ratings have been slacking. They're trying to find a way to kind of liven it up.
Not everything has to be a show, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that, this is where we're going. Like, what's
it's
next?
It's the underwear,
like,
you know, Olympics, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like, it's a couple of days. It's a job interview. And, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be this show. But that's the world that we're in right now. All right, Rick. So, bold predictions right now. Quarterbacks, like, you know, you got all the quarterback shuffle is about to begin. What do you think is going to happen with Aaron Rodgers when it's all said and done?
Well, I think Aaron's going to stay right here in New Jersey. I do believe the Giants and Aaron would be a match made in heaven. And I do think the Giants would also take Shedeur Sanders, whether that's at 3 or at 1. I think it's to be determined, but I could see that. And
that's, you talk about reality TV show. That's a lot of ego.
Hard Knocks was a year late on the.
Wow. For the record, the Giants are the overwhelming favorites right now to get Aaron Rodgers, -150. Pittsburgh Steelers +400. Las Vegas Raiders +550. Tennessee Titans, who we've always thought, you know, is the team to keep our eye on here, +700 right now. Colts 12-1. Colts 12-1. That's an interesting team right there. And then you got the, you know, there's other teams. I don't think the other teams are in the mix.
I could see a Russell Wilson to the Colts based on Chris Ballard and the Shane Steichen's comments this week in the combine saying Anthony Richardson's going to have to earn his starting job. I think Russell Wilson would be a great fit there.
Yeah, you know what? They don't want to give it to him on a platter, right? I guess that was the thought process that he already thought that he earned the job. A couple of years ago, Rick, the Ottawa Senators, like, were all like 19 to 20 year old kids on the team, and they were really bad. And the coach said, "All these guys on the team are all just happy to be in the NHL, but they don't know they're not going to be here for much longer." So, you know, that's sort of the Anthony Richardson. I'm the starting quarterback. You're not for long, kid. Like, if you don't know how to play them, and you're taking yourself out of games. Great stuff as always with Rick Saratella bringing.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, this BYU-Iowa State game is legit crazy right now. We're into double overtime. I don't know. I think it's probably going to go to triple overtime. It's a two-point game right now in double overtime. Unbelievable stuff, but it's a nightmare for both teams, like, in reality. Like, what do you get out of this? Like, you know what I mean? Besides run your team into the ground, someone's going to be, like, upset after they lose this game. It's like, oh, it toughens you up. It's like, they're already tough enough. Like, this time of the year, like, these are the type of games where when it gets almost like a baseball game, when it gets into like the 16th and 17th inning and stuff like that, even though it never does anymore with the ghost runner, but once in a while, it's like, we better win this game because this is going to ruin the rest of our week. Like, you know, we're going to be tired. Our bullpen is shot. This is one of these games, but a lot of stuff I want to get to. Hot button issues right now. Mo Khan steps up and in to do it all. Mo. Good to see you, Mo. How you doing?
I am well, Gabe. I'm actually fasting, so it's been one of those tough adjustments going through this process. But
Ramadan?
We're trucking along, my friend.
You're like Akeem. Well, if Akeem Olajuwon could do it and play basketball, you could do it and do the show. Well, I got faith in you.
Yeah, I got 10, 15 minutes with you, no problem.
But I got happy Ramadan. So I got, I've got faith. I've got faith in you. So yeah, listen. Speaking of which, there's been a lot of controversy. It started in the Four Nations with the booing of the national anthems, and it's not stopping. Right, it's continuing. I think that the tariffs, I think they, you know, the Lutnick, the, you know, the secretary of whatever, of commerce, whoever, basically said, oh, expect an announcement tomorrow. I think we're going to roll the tariffs back after one day. But a lot of chaos and damage has already been done. And I said at the time, the Four Nations guys, I said, there's going to be fallout from this for a couple of people. Like, it's hard to turn this stuff on and off. And some people take this stuff seriously. And a good example now is like Brady Tkachuk in Ottawa. Like, he was not happy the other night when the U.S. anthem was getting booed, right? He said, we know how patriotic he is. So I'm just stating, like, he won't be on. He's going to want to get traded. Like, so, like, this stuff will have ramifications. Auston Matthews was much more diplomatic about it during the Four Nations. And I commented at the time. I said, yeah, he's smart because he knows he's the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He has to sort of thread a needle here. But it's not going to stop. And we saw it on you're a big wrestling fan. So, you know, with the Elimination Chamber or whatever the hell it was the other night in Toronto, it got heavily booed. Pat McAfee said Canada was a terrible country. And I don't think it was part of a wrestling shtick, actually. He was mad for real. Yeah, the WWE, you know, definitely knew it was going to happen, and I think they did it for shtick, right? And they got the pop, they got the controversy, they got the headlines with Pat getting mad and everything. So that's one thing. And I'm not going to get mad at McAfee for saying something on a freaking wrestling show. Like, it's like getting mad at JR for saying puppies. Look, the puppies. Right? It's like, it is what it is. It's wrestling. Right? So, like, I think Cam's mic. There's Cam's mic. It's wrestling. Like, people are all mad at him. It's like, dude, it's wrestling. Like, anything that's said on, like, on a wrestling show is kind of like fair game, man. Right? But I tweeted today, I said, I think the NHL, to calm this down and not have people talk about it and get back to talking about hockey every night, would be to just play the local national anthem. If you're in MSG, play the damn, you know, Star Spangled Banner. If you're in Canada, play freaking old Canada. I think it would solve a lot of problems. I got overwhelming. Like, I had a ton of responses to this. I didn't, you know, expect the firestorm that I got. And I was surprised. Everybody basically said, why do we play the national anthem in pro leagues? Only it should only be in international sports. Cam, should they play the national anthems before NHL hockey games?
I'm kind of with the people. I know this is unpopular take, but no, I don't think you should. I do believe in international competition. It's both national anthems. It's the pageantry. But you know what, Gabe? It's one of those things. Just play the damn game. Like, it's one of those things that I don't think you really need a national anthem. And I think more people would prefer it, but it just takes up time. And, you know, I just play hockey. You don't need national anthem.
I think older people, I think, prefer it because they see it as a tribute to service. Yeah. And, you know, that's the whole point. All right. Like, so thanks, you know, for people that fought for us. So, you know, so we can play this game. But, you know, Mo, you see in Europe, you're a soccer fan as well. Yeah. They don't do it, right? Yeah. And they listen, it's just going to start, like, well, let's just don't do it and only do it in international games. But I got a great response from someone today, and we had a ton of them. And for the record, even our boy George Kurtz said he doesn't know why they play anthems at pro sport events. But somebody had a good idea and said, just drop the anthems and have a moment of silence for fallen vets in the military in the past. And people aren't going to boo that. And then just sort of move on and have player introductions and introduce the other team and let people take their hatred out on the players as opposed to the anthems. Where do you stand on it, Mo?
I could care less for anthems, to be honest with you. You know, when I'm calling games, I'll stand up, respect that. But I'll have my head set on, talk to the producer. Okay, what do we have next coming up, right? I mean, and, you know, when you look at it this way, guys, when you look around you during an anthem, there's a good number of people who aren't stopping what they're doing, taking off their hats, respecting the anthem being played for the U.S. or Canadian anthem out there. So the reality is, there's a lot of people who don't care for the anthem. and don't understand what it means as a patriotic value symbol for whether you're from the U.S. or from Canada. So at the end of the day, unless it's being sponsored by any company, there's no need to have the anthem be played before games, because quite frankly, it just doesn't add anything to what? What's that going to do for you? Nothing at the end of the day. And, you know, for the NHL, you have to wonder now, what are they going to say moving forward here? Because there'll be more U.S.-Canada games coming up in the next few weeks here. Are they
going to
stop?
Going into the playoffs.
Exactly. That's your idea, you know, Gabe. It's a good idea.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's feeding the fans. It's fueling the divide. The media loves this stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Both the Canadian media, oh, look how patriotic Canadians have become. And the American media is like, look at these scumbags in Canada booing our anthem every night and doing it even louder. You know, and it just, I would say, like, you know, out of unity in the NHL, be like, listen, out of unity, we're not going to do the anthem right now. But then people are going to say, oh, you're wimping out and you're sellout and you're woke. And they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't. But we all, there's one person to blame for all of this. And it's not Gary Bettman.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is Sports Rage. I am Renzi. Like I said, it's an interesting, you know, topic. Like I said, I believe they're going to dial down this whole tariff thing already. The stock market crashed, and I saw today the Lutnick, the Secretary of Commerce or whatever, was talking about, oh, expect an announcement tomorrow. We'll see. I don't think it'll die down, though. Like, the NHL, and it's overshadowing the games. That's the problem. The NHL has a trade deadline coming up. So, Mo Khan, we only got a couple of minutes tonight, Mo. We were up against it tonight. But speaking of the Canes, been an up-and-down year for them, but it's a little bit of up right now post Four Nations face-off. What's the buzz of Montreal right now? Watched the game the other night, and there was an energy in the arena that hasn't been there for a couple of years.
Right.
Just basically because the team doesn't suck, right? Like, people, you know what I mean? Like I watched them play, and I was like, you know what? I know Buffalo were terrible. But I watched a play versus Buffalo, and, you know, kids in the stands are happy. You know, everybody was smiling in the stands. There seems to be a positivity around the team right now.
There is. They re-signed Jake Evans today to a new deal.
Instead of trading him, you're right. Everybody wanted and thought he might get traded, yeah.
Right, and that lessens the angst about are they going to sell, keeps them in the conversation. They're only point off from the wild card spot. And that's what half fans want. Whether they make the playoffs, it's gravy for them this year. But the reality is they want to be relevant going towards the end of March into April, because, guys, since the cup run, they've not been playing any good hockey since October of every new year, right? So I think at this point now for half fans, the optimism is at a yellow right now in the traffic light department here. And if they do make some moves in the summertime, that's where I think the biggest thing will be for Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton is getting some better equipped players that can play in the top two lines. And some impact players with so many draft picks to work with, I think the Habs will be very busy this summer to make themselves a lot more respectable next fall.
And you know what? It even is affecting. I wanted to ask you, because the CF Montreal are in Vancouver this Saturday, and it's even affecting like the MLS now. Like, people in Vancouver, they booed the anthem the other day, and it pissed off the captain of the Vancouver Whitecaps. He scored the winning goal, and then after, he goes, oh, I was happy for the fans, or at least the ones that didn't boo the anthem. It's like, oh, God, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, it's just going to keep going, man. Imagine the playoffs, too, in hockey, right? That's why I really hope that it's just like two Canadian teams in the Stanley Cup Finals. It silences everybody.
Good luck.
But, yeah, it just upset America. So that's why I don't want to happen this year. But CF Montreal, Mo. Is it as bad as it appears from far? The Whitecaps are -209. The Whitecaps have won their first two games to start a season for only the third time in franchise history. They're actually rolling and look pretty good, the Caps. CF Montreal do not so far, Mo. What can you tell us about CF Montreal as the MLS season started?
They're very twitchy right now, a young team in transition. They are the type of team that develops and sells at the end of the day here. But for owner Joey Saputo, you have to wonder, because he's very twitchy when it comes to sacking managers. and whether or not he might go in a different direction. If he does, I think it would be his like eighth new manager he would bring in since they brought the team to the MLS back in 2012. So I think they get out of this funk. They get out of this funk, guys, but I just think it'll take some time for them. But will it be too little too late if they don't catch up? Because, again, these games will come in thick and fast for them. If they fall behind the wayside here, they might not make that conversation of being a wild card team, if not a low-end playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
Man, it's baffling to me that Saputo doesn't spend money on players for that team. I don't get it, because he'd sell tickets. Like, people, they have fans. Right?
He's
like,
been
I understand
about
Vancouver.
That. He's been questioned about
yeah.
that. He's been questioned.
Yeah, like, you know, like the Vancouver Whitecaps actually have a challenge, right? Like, they don't have a lot of revenue and stuff like that. They don't own the stadium that they play in. They got to rent it. Like, there's a lot of sort of issues like that. And they find a way, but, you know, the impact, Whitecaps rolling right now. So, hell of a basketball game tonight. Quick update right now. The Clippers are up by 10 on the Phoenix Suns. The Pelicans are hanging around the Lakers. Lakers are winning 80-71 right now. College basketball, really close, Cam. San Diego State and UNLV, 34-32, sort of as expected.
Yeah, totally. And Gabe, I know we're on the Phoenix Suns. They were getting murdered. Maybe they can come back with a late run. And
I'm on the Clippers.
I'm not on the Suns.
Right. No, I'm on the LA Clippers. No.
I'm the only insane one. I took the Pelicans, too, plus 8.5. Sorry. Yeah, we're dumpster diving tonight. They're lingering.
No, the Suns are a train wreck. Then the Clippers have actually been playing pretty well. Kawhi's playing well. They've been playing pretty well. They lost the last two games to the Lakers.
Yeah,
exactly. This was one of those. They're due to win. Like, it was just, you know. For the record, BYU ended up winning 88-85 in double overtime. Cash the tickets, baby. We'll see you on a Wicked Wednesday. Other later.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.